Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 3-year anniversary of Pancakes and Power Slams. I am so excited about what we have tonight. It's just going to be awesome. It's going to be power packed. We've got our special guest host that I'm going to introduce here shortly. We're going to talk some WWE, as always. This is our weekly wrestling recap. Today we're also going to talk about, for the flavor of the week, the top 5 patriotic gimmicks in honor of our 3-year anniversary and our guest host. And we also will talk some Hall of Fame as well. We didn't get a chance to talk much Hall of Fame last week because we had such a power-packed show. And as my boy Derek says, 90 minutes is never enough, and we kind of squeezed past the, you know, our Flavor of the Week topics last week, and basically it was a fantastic show. Thank you so much for the two straight weeks of wrestling roundtable discussion. We definitely have much more of that here coming soon, and we're just going to have so much fun. I'm so excited. I'm so indebted. I'm so thankful for 3 years on the air. I mean, I've been a journalist for quite some time, so that requires a lot of research and a lot of people. And I look at popular MCs and VJs and different like hosts, television hosts, and I look at their background, their record, and I think about just, I mean, in their history, I think about just a lot of them start off with a year or two having their own radio show, you know, and then kind of fell off. Of course, they found good opportunities, you know, promising opportunities and landed good spots. But, you know, I am so happy to be on this show every week and to say on top of this show, I've had so many amazing opportunities from this show. And I would just continue to be indebted to thank all the people who have supported me as a person, as a wrestling journalist, as a sports journalist, as a writer, as a featured columnist, as a featured editor. I mean, just the opportunities in this past 3 years has been so humbling, so mind-boggling that I spent so much of my time thinking about being at this moment here. And a lot of times, you know, it just seems as if things seem insurmountable, and it's such a big hill to climb, and such an insurmountable hill to climb. And you get that feeling sometimes when you have a big old dream. You're like, oh, it's going to be so tough to get there, so tough to be able to achieve it, and so tough to be able to really get to the dream. But I tell you what, man, you just got to do it. And that's what really that's what helped me so much within just being able to really have the opportunity to be here and to achieve my dreams. I've always wanted to be in the field of professional wrestling in some form or some fashion. And like I've said before on many, many episodes, you know, I've had a few wrestling contracts. I used to amateur wrestle. I've been a personal trainer for 10 years now. And so I've had an opportunity to really train. I've even done some MMA training. I've really had an opportunity to really had an opportunity for a long time to be in the business, to really train and prepare myself to be in this business and to be, you know, in wrestling in some form or some fashion. But I tell you, man, it's so amazing. Years ago, when I thought about, you know, all of the awesome journalists and editors and writers of the time, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the Vince Russos, the Ed Ferraras, you know, the Dave Laganas, you know, you name it, as far as Brian Gewirtz, you know, all the awesome writers of pro wrestling. I was like, man, somehow I got to be in that somehow as far as writing is concerned. I've always been a writer. I've always loved writing. My undergrad is in public relations. So I loved writing. I've always loved writing. And so I was like, man, you know, how do I still get to the point where I'm in wrestling? I love wrestling. I want to write about wrestling. And, man, I'm just so thankful that 3 years, three years ago, I just said, I'm going to do it. I consulted with a few buddies of mine just for some encouragement. Ryan Fuqua, one of our co-hosts, was supportive from day one. He was really supportive at day one. I came up with the vision, and it's so amazing that I came up with the vision, and I talked to Ryan. Him and I actually had a talk at Starbucks because I was so serious about it. I talked with Ryan. I said, dude, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start a radio show, and if you're on board, you're on board. I'd love for you to be. And he was, you know, supportive from day one. And, man, that took off, and my boy Derek used to work with him, you know, about 6 years ago, close to 6 years ago, and found out he was in love with professional wrestling, used to be a wrestler himself. And I told him, I said, dude, I'm going to start a radio show. I got to do it. I got to start now. I just got to delve into it. I have writing experience, but I don't have much radio journalism experience. All of my journalism was through writing. So that was most of my time. That was most of my opportunity to really shine. But I tell you what, man, I just delve into it. I just went, and I didn't stop. I didn't quit. And 3 years later, we're here. And I'm so honored. I'm so thankful. You know, I might sound Big Show sappy right now, but so be it. I'm just so amazed by all of the people who supported me throughout the 3 years. You know, Bleacher Report for hanging on and giving me an amazing opportunity. RioWrestling.net, which is the live stream. I used to write for Wrestling Inc. and they're big advocates. They were a big advocate at one point in time of Wrestling Inc. and just the opportunity to them linking up with me and you know, being a big fan of my writing and just really jumping supporting me for quite some time now. And now, you know, they feature my show every week on their site. Amazing people over there. PWMania.com, another opportunity that I have now that, you know, they gave me an opportunity. Were interested in me. So, you know, kudos to them. And all the people, all the sites and all the books and all the interviews that I've contributed with for, you know, just because I decided to go. Just because I decided to do it and to not give up. You know, there were times where ratings dipped and Derek and I had, conversations about, like, you know, a couple years ago, we're like, man, you know, what's going on? Should we keep it going? And just, you know, I'm going to be transparent. It's our 3-year anniversary. We really had conversations of, you know, should we keep going? And then we just persevered. And because of our perseverance, because of our heart, we just continue. I told Derek we got to keep going, and because of that, we've got even better opportunities, better than ever. The show continues to be amazing, and I'm so honored. So, without further ado, to celebrate our 3-year anniversary, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Patriot, Dale Wilkes. It is such an honor for you to be on the show tonight, sir.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I apologize for the delay. I got a lot going on in the process of moving, and so we were working late tonight. It's a little after 11 o'clock here in South Carolina, and where I'm moving from and moving to is about 40 miles apart, and my phone has absolutely very little charge left on it, so if I do lose you before I get home, as soon as I get inside, I'll hit the charger and call you right back. But I want to go ahead and call you, like I said, I would do 15 minutes from then. So appreciate you having me.
All right. Fantastic, man. I appreciate you just spending time even through moving and doing, you know, making some life changes yourself to spend some time with hanging out with us tonight as our guest host. So let's get into the life. Let's get into the wrestling career of the Patriot, Dale Wilkes. Now, when you first started wrestling, you first got your break about 25 years ago, a little bit over 25 years ago, with the AWA. So before you went to AWA, you played college football, if I'm not mistaken. And let us know your transition from college football. What did you want to do when you went to South Carolina? What were you going for? And what made you decide to take the pro wrestling route?
Well, I'm a South Carolina native. I've been born and raised in Columbia, and the University of South Carolina is in Columbia. And in high school, I started the recruiting process, and I was recruited by most major universities in the Southeast. But it was a pretty easy choice for me. Growing up a Gamecock fan, I knew that I was going to play football at the University of South Carolina. I played there from 1980 through 1984. Had a very good career. Ended up my career as a first-team consensus All-American, most valuable player on my team in 1984, captain of that team. And at that time, it was the most successful team in South Carolina history. Now, I also grew up a big wrestling fan, and I'd go to the Township Auditorium in Columbia, South Carolina on Tuesday nights and watch pro wrestling, Jack and Jerry Briscoe, Rip Hawk, Sweet Hansen, guys like that. And I knew that one day, whenever football ended, that I was going to pursue a career in pro wrestling. And I had a very brief NFL career, 1985 and 86. The Falcons released me prior to the start of the 86 season. So I came back home to Columbia. And in late 86 or either early 87, I decided that I would go through a wrestling school that at the time existed here in Columbia. And it was owned and operated by the fabulous Moolah, Lillian Ellison. And so that's how my career started. Once football was over with, I just transitioned into pro wrestling.
That's fantastic. So we hear that a lot of that as far as, you know, ex-football players decide, you know, having a knack and a desire to be a pro wrestler. Now, who did you grow up just really wanting to emulate? Who are some of the wrestlers that you grew up just really them being a role model, just really looking up to? And other than Moolah, who helped train you on your way to becoming an established wrestler in the American Wrestling Association?
Well, growing up as a kid, I was a Jack Briscoe mark. I mean, Jack Briscoe was it, brother. As much as I love football, Jack Briscoe was the baddest thing on two wheels. And, of course, I also I grew up in South Carolina, so all I got to see was Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And saw the Briscoes, and you saw Rip Hawk Sweet Hansen, the Missouri Mauler, Brute Bernard. I occasionally would see Wahoo. Occasionally I would get Florida Championship Wrestling. But those guys that were in the Mid-Atlantic area is what I grew up watching and loved it. But once I got into the business and started training at Moolah's, I was very fortunate that on one of her shows, she had Wahoo McDaniels on there. And she was running the show here in Columbia. And Wahoo was working for Vern Gagne at the time in the AWA. And Wahoo had a home in Charlotte. And he was spending the holidays in Charlotte around Christmas. And Moolah was running a little show here in Columbia. And so she had Wahoo on the show. And that was when I met Wahoo. And that's who, probably more than anybody else, at least at that particular time, had an influence on me, was Wahoo. After I met Wahoo, I literally went out on the road with him for the next couple of years. He got me hired up in the AWA. And then when he was working here in the Carolinas, wherever Wahoo went, he made sure that Dale went. And we spent hours and hours and hours on the road together. And literally took me under his wing and just taught me the business. And it was quite a thing. This was a guy I'd watched on TV as a kid. Now I'm traveling with him. And when he lived in Charlotte at the time, he also had a roommate by the name of Ray Stevens, one of the greatest workers ever in the business. And so not only did I get to spend a lot of time on the road with Wahoo, but also with Ray. And as a young wrestler, you can't ask for two better guys to learn the business from than Wahoo and Ray.
Yeah, the Crippler. Absolutely. Yeah. Ray Stevens is, he's actually one of the most he had a history of being one of the toughest wrestlers. A lot of people said that, he was one of the toughest wrestlers to get in the ring with. And definitely a first ballot, shoe-in WWE Hall of Famer, without question, coming up soon. There are some rumors that this year was the year for him. But I'm sure within the next year or two, we'll see Ray Stevens in the Hall of Fame without question. So you started wrestling, you start doing some training with the fabulous Moolah, and your first moments in the AWA, was it goosebumps and meeting Vern for the first time? I know there's been a history of Vern having one of the most intense and brutal training camps of all time, second to Stu Hart. Let us know about time with Vern Gagne and meeting him and getting the opportunity to wrestle for the AWA.
Well, it was a big move for me. I got to meet Vern, got to meet Greg, and there were guys. The AWA at that time wasn't what it once was. It basically was a TV company at that time. They had their show come on ESPN weekdays, through Fridays, from 4 to 5 o'clock. But they still had a lot of good talent in there, Ox Baker, and of course, they'd bring in Sarge. But it was neat getting to meet Vern and those guys in the AWA, and what a great history they had. Basically, at one time, anybody that was ever anybody in the business had been through Minneapolis and worked for Vern. And I got to spend some time in the ring. As a matter of fact, I rented a room in the basement of Brad Lingham's house, and Brad had a great career over in Japan and was a good technical wrestler, and he had a ring set up at his house, so was able to get in a lot of ring time with Brad, and and other guys like Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond and guys like that. So those guys were very helpful early in my career.
Awesome. That's awesome. So how did the Trooper gimmick emerge?
Well, there was a guy that helped train me that worked for Mueller. Back then, for those that recall and those that know the history of wrestling, when the TV shows were taped, they brought in guys that would be the only time they'd work TV shows. They were called enhancement guys. They used to be called job guys. Mm-hmm. They were called enhancement guys. And Mueller had a few guys that she would occasionally send up, and they would work Vince's TV just in an enhancement match. And one of the guys that she had was actually a local deputy sheriff in one of the counties right outside of Columbia. And so on the weekends when he would wrestle and work just the little shows that Mueller would run, he worked as the super enforcer. And he looked just like he did when he went to work every day as a deputy sheriff. Well, when I was in Minneapolis and had been up there for a few months working for Vern, and of course Wahoo worked in the office as well there working for those guys, he sent me a tape, the guy that worked as a super enforcer, and asked me if I would pass it on to Wahoo. And I did. And a few weeks later, Wahoo came back to me and said, look, we have no interest in the guy. He goes, but we do like the gimmick, and we do like the character. And so Wahoo and Greg Gagne and Vern Gagne sat down with me and explained to me this character called the Trooper and what they saw it being and the way they wanted it to look and the way they wanted it to present itself to the people. And that was their idea. I give them credit for it. And as a young, upcoming wrestler, this was really my first big break. It was going to be my first time ever working on nationwide TV on ESPN. So I was all in, man. I'm all for it.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. And for those who followed AWA, we know that the Trooper was definitely not very similar, not similar at all to the character that who you became known for. You stayed in AWA for only a few years, mainly because closed down towards the latter part of your time there. So the 3 or so years that you were in the AWA, let us know some notable feuds that you were in. Of course, you won the tag team championships with DJ Peterson towards the latter part of the AWA. It's actually one of the last episodes of the AWA in 1990. Let us know just your time there, the notable feuds that you have, and your partnership with DJ Peterson.
Well, matter of fact, DJ and I were the very last tag team champs in the AWA. And I do take pride in that we were tag team champs and the last. So we had some good feuds with the Destruction Crew, Wayne Bloom and Mike Enos. I also, before DJ, teamed with Paul Diamond some. And also, just as a singles wrestler, had a feud with Larry Zbyszko that was a lot of fun and really enjoyed that and came very close to winning the belt from Larry because Larry was a heavyweight champ there at the time. He had the heavyweight belt. And on one of the TV shows for the belt, I came within just a few seconds of getting the belt from Larry and then also had the opportunity in some six-man tag matches sort of as a superpowers tag team. It was me and Nikita Koloff and Sergeant Slaughter teaming together. So I had the opportunity to do that then. They had turned Nikita babyface, and so I had the opportunity to work several times with Sarge and Nikita. So it was quite a thrill. And I think one of the biggest thrills for me was just working a regular house show in North Dakota. And Greg came to me one night, I think we were in Jamestown, North Dakota, and he told me that I was working main event that night with Harley Race. And
nice.
I knew who Harley Race was, obviously, growing up a wrestling fan. And not only was I going to be working with Harley Race, but that Harley was going to put me over. And I just couldn't believe it. And I said, I questioned Greg. I said, does Harley know that he's doing this? He said, yeah, Harley knows he's doing this. And I said, is Harley all right with this? He said, sure, Harley's all right with this. He said, it's just a spot show. He said, it's not TV. He said, but still, we think that much of you, and we want to build the company around you. Of course, unfortunately, the company didn't last very long, but still, they had the kind of confidence in me and belief in me that, you know, that they would put me in the ring with Harley, and Harley had no problem going out and putting me over.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. Well, one company that did revolve around you was the GWF, the Global Wrestling Federation, that started in the early 90s. It was another infectious type of – it wasn't necessarily an indie show, but it did transition. It did carry that ESPN flair that AWA had. GWF was aired on ESPN. I remember as a kid, elementary and middle school kid at the time, when watching GWF. I was actually in middle school watching the GWF, and just, oh, man, it was absolutely amazing. I remember watching the TV title finals, and this guy that just really encapsulated the point and the purpose and just the feel and the essence of the Global Wrestling Federation was a guy named the Patriot, and he came in his American garb, and the fans absolutely fell in love with him from the very, very beginning. So how in the world did the Trooper become the Patriot?
Well, good question. Once the AWA folded and went out of business, I made one trip to Japan for All Japan Pro Wrestling. I worked a tour over there for Baba and them, and then came back, and the AWA had folded, and there were rumors that there was going to be a company out of Atlanta that was starting up that was going to have the same show or the same TV time slot on ESPN that the AWA had, Monday through Fridays from 4 to 5 o'clock, called the Global Wrestling Federation. And for the longest, it was just a rumor. There was this rich businessman out of Africa that was going to invest millions of dollars into this upstart wrestling company. And we heard that forever and forever, it seemed like. Actually, it was just a few months, I think. But when you're young and you're hungry and you're looking for something and an opportunity, it seems like an eternity. But eventually, someone did invest some money. It wasn't the guy from Africa that everybody said it was going to be, but it was some folks from Georgia there that invested some family money. And Joe Pedicino and Bill Eadie were running the show. And I got a call, and they said they were going to FedEx me a plane ticket to fly to Dallas, Texas for the very first global GWF TV taping. They wanted me part of the crew. Now, all they told me was to bring my gear. And I thought that meant that I was going to work either as Del Wilkes or the Trooper. I figured it would probably be the Trooper because that's what I had just been doing a few months before for the AWA on ESPN. And literally just a few hours before we were to leave the hotel and go to the Sportatorium, the world-famous Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas, Bill Eadie, Joe Pedicino called me. They were in Joe's motel room. We were all staying at the same motel. And they said, we need you to walk across the parking lot. Come over to Joe's room. We want to talk to you. Got an idea. And I had no clue what to expect, but I went. I was called, so I went. And got in and sat down with them. And they said, we've got an idea for a character we think that could really, really, really take off. Now, I take you back. This was when I think either in 90 or 91 when Iraq had gone into Kuwait, liberated Kuwait, and we had gone in with our military to liberate Kuwait. And obviously, when something like that happens, patriotism is at a fever pitch. And they said because of what's going on politically in the country, what's going on militarily in the country or over in the Middle East, with us going into Kuwait and liberating Kuwait and trying to drive Saddam Hussein and Iraq back out of Kuwait, patriotism's pretty high right now. We got an idea for a character. And they literally had a costume box right there in Bill's hotel room. And they opened it up and they pulled out a red, white, and blue pair of tights and a red, white, and blue set of trunks to go over that. They pulled out a red, white, and blue mask. And then they had a red, white, and blue vest with it. And they said, it's a character called the Patriot. And we think you're the guy for it. And we think it'll really be something that the people will really get behind. And I said, I'm in. Again, I'm a hungry kid. I'm wanting to get a break in the business, and I'm wanting to move up in the business. So if these guys think I'm the guy to do this, and I'm all in. And that night, when we did our very first TV taping, nobody had ever seen that character there. And when I walked through that door and walked down that aisle, that place erupted. And I knew then that we were on to something good and to something special. And it definitely was.
Wow, it absolutely was. I remember, from the womb, I've been a wrestling fan. So, you know, I've always been just hungry to watch all things wrestling. And I remember as a kid, you know, watching World Class, watching IWCCW. It came on like, you know, moon dawn in the morning. And, yeah, it was just – I watched, you know, everything. Every time I can grab something wrestling, I would just surf the channels. Even as a, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kid, you know, in the 80s, just surfing anything for wrestling. And I remember, you know, I've always been an ESPN guy. I've always been into sports, even as a little kid. And I remember tuning in, I mean, of course, to AWA, and then when AWA went off, I tuned in ESPN for Global Wrestling Federation, and I remember the Patriot character being so infectious. And I remember other characters like, Buddy Landell and the Lightning Kid and Jerry Lynn, Soul Taker, and just a lot of characters that was in there. Of course, Hot Stuff, Eddie Gilbert, so many. Al Perez, another one with Gary Hart. A lot of characters, a lot of people that really, really either were established like Butch Reed or really making a name for themselves like Johnny Hawk, and of course the Ebony Experience, which was one of the reasons why Booker T became one of my all-time favorite wrestlers, because I remember him in the Ebony Experience, and yourself. There was such an amazing breed of wrestlers that really got their – really became – who they were, really became established, really used GWF as a launching pad. Now, let us know the people who you absolutely loved working with in the GWF.
Well, before I do that, I'll tell you a few other names that were there that were just really their careers taking off was Cactus Jack, the handsome stranger who was Mark Bagwell.
Buff Bagwell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you also, of course, Stan Lane was there. He was an established star at that time, but mm-hmm. and then Scotty the Body was there, and so there was yep. there was a lot, like you said, a lot of established talent, but a lot of up and coming talent as well too. And it was an exciting time. I worked with Buddy Landell. I worked with Al Perez. I worked with Doug Gilbert. I worked with the Cactus, enjoyed working with those guys, worked with Scotty. I worked Soul Taker, worked with all those guys, man, and just had a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And it was a great learning time for me as well, because a lot of those guys that I worked with, again, were more established, experienced stars at that particular time than I was. But they had decided mm-hmm. that they wanted to, they wanted to build the company around me and make me their top babyface there. So I was happy about that, but I was also glad to get the opportunity to work with those established guys, too, to learn from them and to be in the ring with them and just watch them, you know, look through the curtain and watch them. So it was a real exciting time. It really was. We thought we had something that maybe could sustain itself and eventually compete with WCW and WWF. Unfortunately, we just didn't have the money they did. We didn't have the pockets that they did. But it sure was fun and exciting while it lasted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I loved coming home after school and watching some Global Wrestling Federation. And there were just so many awesome times, and it's so funny. A couple of years ago, I watched a marathon. I DVR'd like 10, 12 hours, probably even more than that, actually. It was on ESPN Classics a couple years ago. A marathon came on. I remember watching all these episodes, you know, almost 25 years back. But just to fast forward almost 25 years, you know, 20 to 25 years, and just see all of just the really even green but hungry talent that the GWF had, and just, you know, for them to really choose you, like you said, as the top babyface, I'm sure that was an amazing feeling. So you started off being the television champion. You actually won the TV championship, you know, the inaugural TV championship in 91. And then, you know, not too far after that, you feuded for the top title, which was the North American Heavyweight Championship. Let us know how it was for, you know, they were building the company around you. But the moment when they said that you're going to be the top guy and win the championship, describe to us that feeling that you had. I'm sure there was a time, I'm sure that you kind of had that feeling like you made it, in a sense. Like you still got so much to go, there's still so much to climb, still so much, you know, this road to travel. But I'm sure that it was a I made it sense that probably – you were feeling at the time. Let us know your thoughts on becoming the North American Heavyweight Championship, you know, winning that title in DWF.
Well, there's always moments throughout your career. I don't care if it's in what form of athletics it's in, what for me, football or pro wrestling, there are moments that just reaffirm that, yeah, I'm doing the right thing and I'm headed in the right direction and other people think I can do this too. And one of the big ones for me was when Wahoo, you know, took a liking to me. Another big one for me was when Harley Race put me over. But then another huge, huge moment for me that just reaffirmed, hey, I do have a career in this business. And not only, you know, do I think that, but these folks think that as well, is when they decided they were going to put the belt on me and make me the North American Heavyweight Champion. And with Al Perez, listen, I knew who Al Perez was before I got into business. I knew who Stan Lane was. I knew who Bill Eady was. I knew who all those guys were before I even got into the business. But here I am in the ring with these guys, and these guys are putting me over, and they're doing so for a reason and a purpose, because they think I'm worthy of being the top babyface in this business. And it makes you feel good. It makes you feel like you made the right decision and your hard work's paid off, and that, wow, I'm on nationwide TV Monday through Friday. I'm the top baby face with this company. Yeah, I think I got a shot here. I think I've got a career. I think I've made the right choice.
Yeah. Were there any discussion of turning you heel in the GWF?
It had been brought up. I don't think with ever any serious consideration or serious discussion. But it had been brought up. And of course they, they later brought in Doug Gilbert as, you know, my dark side, the dark patriot. And he and I worked together. Of course, enjoyed working with Doug. But there was some brief discussion on it, but I don't know that anything ever really got serious about making that happen.
Yeah, I think that I think it would have been, you know, almost akin to a 1996 Hulk Hogan bash at the beach turn if you would have made that jump to the dark side, so to speak, because you were so over in the GWF. And just, you know, just the Dallas, Austin, you know, crowd, the Texas crowd, period, just – And we even seen this on Raw. We'll talk about that here on the show later. But just I love the Texas crowd, because the Texas crowd still has the good guy and bad guy feel to them. And just watching the people at the Dallas Sportatorium, how legendary that was. Now, I'm sure the cameras made it really seem like it was a packed house, but wrestling every week at the Sportatorium, how many people usually was at a show that we saw on TV?
You know, I don't know exactly how many was there. It wasn't that big a building anyway. It's like the Township Auditorium here in Columbia, my hometown. Not a overly big building, but the people are right on top of you. It was an old wooden structure. I mean, my goodness, back in the 50s, George Jones and Elvis Presley had performed there. And even though it wasn't a glamorous venue, it was just legendary. And it was hot. There was no air conditioning. They just had big exhaust fans up in the rafters. And you talk about old school. It was just hot and sweaty.
Yeah.
And, of course, when the GWF first started there, it was in the summer. And, you know, now they've asked me to wear a mask, and I've never worn a mask. Well, I had worn a mask before, but not in conditions like that. And all I had to do was put it on, and within 5 minutes, I mean, I was just sweating profusely. But yet, you know, the people right on top of you, they were loud, they were rambunctious, they were into everything you did. And it was just a great group of people to be in front of. Maybe not the biggest crowd I've ever worked in front of, certainly, but one of the more excitable crowds I've ever worked in front of.
Wow, absolutely amazing. Yeah, so unfortunately, it didn't last long. We have some comments here on the RioWrestling.net live stream. Love the Sportatorium, love shows there. Were you or any of your buddies ever attacked before or during a match? Now, I'm sure that this wouldn't apply to you because you were such a good guy at the time. But the good and the bad guys, you know, pro wrestling in the late 80s and early 90s was such a larger than life type of entity that people believed that it was so real, and they were so engulfed in the reality, so to speak, of the fantasy. And, you know, people really thought bad guys were just devilish and just really bad guys and villainous guys in real life. You ever remember any stories, you ever recall any stories of people actually wanting to, you know, hurt any of the villains?
Oh, yeah. Throughout my career, I saw instances where people, you know, would get in somebody's face. I saw a guy slap Wahoo. His bonnet, his feathers. I saw a guy slap him in the back of his head one night as he was walking to the ring, and Wahoo just turned around and pummeled this dude. I mean, just beat him like a dog. But, you know, with me being this just ultimate baby face, I never experienced any of that until later in my career. I never had anybody come after me or try to attack me until I was actually working in the WWF and working with Bret Hart in Canada. Not until then did I experience people trying to get in the ring, people getting in the ring, coming after me. But I never experienced any of that myself personally in those global days, but I've seen it happen throughout my career on many occasions.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you go to Japan. Unfortunately, before you go to Japan, you know, the demise of the GWF. So before,
well,
how
actually,
did you
actually, Let me correct you on that one. Actually, I left the GWF before it folded. I had an opportunity to go to Japan.
You went in 92. Yeah, you went in 92 and it folded in 94, right?
Yeah. I went. I had always wanted another opportunity to go back and work for Baba because things didn't go so well when I went the first time and worked as a trooper. So a little later down the road, when I'm more established, more experienced, just better at my craft, when the opportunity arose again in 92 to go back, that's when I went back and just told the guys at Global that I was leaving. I didn't know what would happen, if it would be a one-shot thing for me to go to Japan, but, I would not be a part of any TV tapings for the next month, at least, because I was going to Japan and had an opportunity to go back as the Patriot. And it turned into a full-time thing. I never went back to Global after that.
Right, yeah, I remember that, because towards the latter parts, there were still some names that were still popular, you know, like Hollywood John Tatum and Scotty Flamingo and Chaz and, you know, names like that were still big. But at the same time, you know, it still didn't have the Patriot, you know, Del Wilkes wasn't there anymore. And you went to Japan for a couple of years, and let us know the couple of years that you had in Japan. Was it, you got the opportunity, did it really live up to what you wanted to have and what you wanted to, was your opportunity just, did it live up to the hype? Were you happy there? Let us know your takeaways in Japan.
Yeah, it more than lived up to the hype. I think at least when I was in the business, the perception was amongst the boys that if you could work in Japan, you could work anywhere. It was literally a feather in your cap to be asked to work for New Japan or All Japan. And here they were inviting me back after not too successful tour the very first time I went a few years earlier. And it was obvious just a few nights in that things were different, that I was better. I was just more established. I was bigger. I was better. I looked better. And it wasn't but just a few nights in that Mr. Baba approached me about working for him full time. And at that point in time was a highlight of my career because, I mean, I knew what it meant to work for Baba. And for Baba to want you to be part of his company and be one of the full-time gaijins that work for him. And I work for what I consider, even to this day, I work with the greatest lineup of wrestlers I ever worked with when I worked in, All Japan. When you take into consideration Stan Hansen, Terry Gordy, Dr. J.D. Williams, Doug Furness, Danny Crawford, Masawa, Kobashi, Kawai, Kawada, man, I mean, you don't get any better than that. Jackie Fulton, Bobby Fulton, Tommy Rogers, those were the guys that were working regular for Mr. Bob at that time. And that's phenomenal talent, man. I mean, that's the reason we did the business that we did. I mean, we had something like close to 200 consecutive sellouts in the Tokyo era, in the Tokyo area. And so, yeah, it was more than what I thought it was. Business was phenomenal. And I was a part of it, and they were giving me a big push. And so it was more than what I'd ever dreamed it would be.
Yeah. I'd imagine, because those names that you said alone are just, you know, dynamite names for sure. And so you were over in AJPW, and so that landed a spot in WCW. And of course, you know, we know you in WCW with your team with Bagwell, Stars and Stripes. Now, you're only in WCW for a little bit, and then you had another run in Japan. But let us know your time in WCW. It didn't seem like it was as you expected. It would imagine that because of the steam that was coming from GWF and then your run in Japan, that you would have a more prominent spot than just being in the tag team. Now, granted, you know, you had an opportunity to work with, Marcus Alexander, who became Buff Bagwell, Stars and Stripes. You won the tag team championship there. But in your short run in WCW, let us know how you really felt and your takeaways of your run with WCW.
Well, the only reason I left All Japan was just because of the physicality nature of our work over there. It was just a more stiff style, and it was just tougher on your body. I loved working there better than I loved working anywhere I ever worked. But after a while, mm-hmm. I just needed a break. And plus, I had a family, here in the States, and I just didn't like the idea of being away from them a month at a time. So the opportunity presented itself, go to work for WCW, and they were doing things by committee. They were booking by committee. Eric Bischoff was in charge, but when I was in the AWA, Eric was a color commentator. He was our voice on TV, on our TV show, so I knew Eric from there. Mm-hmm. Greg Gagne was on the booking committee in WCW, and of course I knew Greg also from the AWA days. So, they presented me with an opportunity to come home and not have to travel halfway around the world to go to work and not have to spend 30 days on the road at a time and be away from my family for 30 straight days, come back to the States and work. And I did so. And I did so under the pretense that I was going to do, I'd be, pushed and, as a singles wrestler. Now, having said that, it was a lot of great tag teams in the company at the time. And I felt like they could, I think they felt like they could put another one together with Marcus and I. But also too, it was a very, it was just a very cliquish company that just bought, not shortly after I got there, they just bought Hogan in from Vince, and they'd brought in Beefcake and I think the Nasty Boys, and they brought in Savage, and I don't know. It was just it seemed like all of a sudden those were the guys that mattered, and those were the guys they were pushing. Were those established WWF stars that had been working for Vince for a number of years, and so they went in and raided his talent and brought those guys in and put everybody under big guaranteed contracts, and seemed like the rest of us just sort of became an afterthought once they had Hogan in there, and once they had Beefcake, and once they had Savage, then that became the focus of the company, and then you just felt like you were sort of just mired in that tag team thing there. So I think I spent 2 years there. I signed a 3-year deal with them. After a couple of years, I went to Eric and asked him if he'd let me out of my final year of the deal, that I wasn't going to go to work for anybody in the States, any competition, any direct competition, that I had a chance to go back to Japan and work back mm-hmm. there.
You work and you worked with Ace in Japan the second go around, right?
I worked with Ace and Kobashi. Yeah, they teamed Ace and I together a good bit. Then they put me and Ace and Kobashi together in a 3-man tag team. And but I literally just had to walk out on Bischoff. He wouldn't let me out of my last year of the deal. Said he was going to hold my feet to the fire, and I knew I was done. I didn't care what he said. I was gone. And I was supposed to be in a pay-per-view somewhere. I don't know where it was at. I think it was Tupelo, Mississippi. I was supposed to be in a pay-per-view, and the only person I told that I wasn't going to be there was Bagwell. And I was on a plane back to Tokyo. I was done. Whether they were going to let me out of my contract or not, I just walked out on them and jumped on a plane and took a flight to Tokyo.
I can definitely see that. And just, like I said, the steam that was building from, the few years that people knew of the Patriot, and seems like, you'd be a little bit more prominent there. You definitely had a chance to be prominent when you went to the WWE in 1997, and after another run in Japan, you went to the WWE. So let us know your transition from Japan. How did you get the spot to be a WWE wrestler? Actually, that's one of our questions in the chat room. How did you get called to the WWE?
Well, I had literally been in off and on again conversations with them since the early 90s about going to work with them. I actually went up sometime in the early 90s. I can't remember exactly what year it was, and and spent several weeks out on the road working and with them. And so there was always that flirtatious talk there about getting together and going to work for them, but it never worked out really. But Bruce Pritchett, who worked with me in the GWF, was now working in the WWE, or the WWF at this particular time. So Bruce was the one that had contacted me about coming to work there. And I was ready to get back to the States again because of the physical nature of the way we did things in All Japan. It was starting to take a toll on my body, and I'd already suffered some major injuries that were really having an effect on me and affecting my ability to do things in the ring. And I'd already had some major surgeries that were just really, really starting to slow me down. And I figured if I'm ever going to get the opportunity to work for Vince and go back home and work for the WWF, now's the time to do it. And so that's when I took him up on the opportunity to go to work for him. I met with Vince. I flew into WWE headquarters and met with Vince and Jim Ross and sat down, and we hammered out a deal. And I signed a 3-year deal with him and agreed to go to work for him.
And that time was extremely controversial as far as just the fans and just it was all kinds of just intensity the time that you were there. And you almost got immediately, you know, just dumped into the fire feuding with someone like Bret Hart and just really in the heart of the Attitude Era. Just let us know how it was. I'm sure that you've dealt with a lot of fans in Japan and WCW, and your time in GWF, you were the guy. You were just, you know, there were so many. You were such a huge baby face that, you know, so many people were cheering you, and I'm sure you didn't witness what you witnessed in the WWE. During just the advent of the Attitude Era with new types of fans, and of course your patriotic gimmick and feuding with Bret Hart, who was at the time just a huge heel with his anti-American gimmick, and the times that you were going to Canada and just, you know, receive a chorus of boos, and of course you feuded with Bulldog and, you know, other other notable names at the time. But, man, how was it being a part of that era as the Patriot gimmick and such, you know, and let us know how much of a difference it was from, you know, six, 7 years back in your days with GWF?
Well, obviously you're on a much bigger stage than you were in the GWF. But, you know, I had wrestled on the big stage before with WCW in Japan. But this was different. You know, this had more of a worldwide appeal to it than either one of those companies did. Now, I don't know that the WWF's fan base was any more intense or rabid at that time than All Japan's fan base was. But you just had a much more broader worldwide appeal to it, you know, than All Japan did. And, you know, when I first got there, it was obvious that Vince wanted me there. He just wasn't so sure about the Patriot character, the gimmick itself. He just wasn't sure that at that particular time in the wrestling industry, in the beginning of that Attitude Era, could a mass character get over. And I think he just sort of had this wait-and-see approach about it, but it got over. And it got over very quick, and so much so that they dropped me right in the middle of that feud with Bret, who was on his anti-American campaign and the Hart Foundation. And it was just a perfect landing spot for me. And, you know, it vaulted me right to the top there, working with him and working with Davey Boy and working with Owen and working with the Hart Foundation. And so it was exciting to be a part of it. And it was also a different atmosphere there as well, too. I sense that while I was an established star, I'd been a top guy to any company I'd ever worked at. So I was a very established star in the industry. But I sense that Brett probably wasn't that thrilled about having to work with me in the position that we were in, because I wasn't an established WWF star. I was an established star, but I wasn't an established WWF star. He'd been there a long time. And he was also, that was the very infancy in the beginning of just that heat between he and Sean. And, of course, Sean had his group and his faction. And then, of course, Brett had his group. And there was just that heat and intensity between those guys that I was watching build too. So it was really interesting to be in the mix of that whole thing, man. There was a lot going on.
Yeah, definitely was. And you talk about animosity. You know, you had a pretty short tenure there, probably, a year or so in the WWE. What caused your departure in the WWE, and how was it as far as backstage? Was it was the environment conducive to your liking? Was it did you have any legitimate heat with anyone at that time? What caused your departure?
Well, my departure was pure and simple, one thing and one thing only: my health. I couldn't continue to go. I had blown a knee out in Japan. I had ripped my tricep. I'd literally ripped my tricep tendon off the bone on two separate occasions. The first time I did it, I had it repaired. I went back to work, and it ripped again. And at this point in time, I'd been working about a year with it that way. I'd been working about a year and a half with a knee that, if I had not worn a knee brace, I wouldn't have been able to even move in the ring. And I just physically was literally beat up. I was physically done. I just could not continue to go. And that's the one and the only reason that my career there ended. It was just because of chronic reoccurring injuries that I just couldn't overcome. I couldn't. It just finally got the best of me. And I got along with everybody there. I had no backstage heat with anybody. I found out later that Brett had gone to Vince and made some comments, and I was I told Brett there were certain things that at times maybe they wanted us to do in the ring, and just because of the limitations that I was now dealing with because of my injuries, I just couldn't do certain things, and I found out later that Brett went to Vince and complained to Vince about that basically this is a guy that's just, being held together by duct tape and athletic tape, and, he's just beat up, he's worn out, and, he's limited in what he can do in some capacity. But I felt like I could do anything they had asked me to do. But my body just failed me, man, gave out on me, couldn't continue to go, and that was pure simple the only reason my career ended there, my career ended, period.
Wow. So, yeah, you retired shortly after that, am I correct?
Oh, immediately. We were getting ready to go on a Middle East tour, I think into Israel and some surrounding countries there. And I just couldn't do it, man. I could not do it. I was sick and tired of having to deal with the injury, with the pain, with the vicious cycle of pain medication, sleeping pills, muscle relaxers. Just to be able to work out, just to be able to get to the ring, to limp to the ring. I just couldn't train the way I used to. I couldn't do the things in the ring that I needed to do. It was just constant pain. And I met with my orthopedic surgeon, and we had a long talk. And a few days later, I was on a conference call with Vince and JR and my doctor and myself, and we all decided that in the best interest of my health and well-being that I needed to call it quits. And I just had no other choice. I physically was done.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's definitely very, very interesting. Even the time that you had in your, career, it was still, it was still memorable, about 10 years or so. In the business, it was still a very memorable tenure that you had in wrestling. So after you retired, what did you decide to do after that?
Well, the first couple of years, I really didn't do anything except go through surgeries and and recuperation from surgeries, and man, it was a nightmare, and it led to a very painful and life changing addiction to a prescription pain medication that was just just the lowest point of my life that I'd ever gone through, the worst thing I'd ever gone through, that drastically affected my life. And, you know, it started out innocent enough, just a guy trying to take a couple of pain pills to get through a match, to continue doing what he's supposed to do, what he's getting paid very well to do, what he's worked very hard to do, what he's dreamed of doing. But it's a very physical business. And in order to continue to go, you know, there were nights that you had to take the medication, and that eventually turned into just an absolute horrible addiction that just altered my life drastically for several years. And but wow. I was very fortunate, and very blessed that the Lord was very merciful, and He spared my life and saved my life and gave me another opportunity in life. And so that's where we are today. Fast forward all these years. Still here in South Carolina, and still do things that are associated with the business, personal appearances and things like that, but you know, have moved on and gone to the next chapter in my life.
That's awesome. Before we go, I got a couple things. I'm just going to throw out a few names to you and let me know your thoughts on them, real quick thoughts. You're talking about fast forward, you're working on a project right now, just to let people know about the life and times of the Patriot Del Wilkes, actually called Behind the Mask. Let us know a little bit more about that and when you plan on releasing it.
Well, working with a great guy, Michael Elliott, is the producer of this, and he's done some great work on Rock and Roll Express, Magnum TA, many other guys, Boogeyman Jimmy Valiant, and just tremendous work. And that's in the works right now, and should be done sometime later this summer, maybe early fall. It'll be a 2-DVD disc set that'll not only cover my wrestling career, but it also will cover my football career as well. I'm very fortunate that I had a very good football career, and so there'll be some interviews there with some of my teammates in college, some of my coaches. There'll be some footage from a lot of the games. And then, of course, that will then go into the wrestling end of it. And got some great people on here who have agreed to participate in it and take part. And don't want to let an awful lot out of the bag, but just some great people like Bagwell and Greg Gagne and Stan Hansen and many, many others that have agreed to take part in this project and participate in it. So we're looking forward to the completion of it and looking forward to the release of it. And just we're excited about it. And I want to urge everybody that when they do have the opportunity and it's finally released, to make sure they get one, because I think they'll greatly, greatly enjoy some just wonderful work by Michael Elliott.
Absolutely amazing. All right, real quick before I go, every time I interview someone on the show, I do a name association. Throw a few names, 3 or 4 names at you. Let me know your overall thoughts on. Let's start with Eric Bischoff.
A good mind for the business. Eager to learn. That's about all I'll say.
Gotcha. How about Hulk Hogan?
Obviously the guy that changed the business. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He literally changed our business from a local, regional business to a worldwide business. And he, more than anybody else, of course, along with Vince, they're responsible for that. But the guy that forever changed professional wrestling and took it from just a regional level to a worldwide acceptable level. It used to be that being a wrestling fan, you know, a lot of people looked down their nose at you if you were a wrestling fan. They considered most of them just dumb Southern hayseeds. But he made it cool to be a wrestling fan.
Absolutely awesome. How about Bret Hart?
Great. A true professional, one of the best professionals I ever, consummate professional, Brett was very serious about what he did. He was very serious about his work. Of course, being brought up in the family that he was in, around his dad and around his brothers, I mean, it was he was good, the consummate professional.
Awesome. And then finally, Vince McMahon.
He's the greatest promoter that's ever lived. I mean, he's talk about Barnum and Bailey and Colonel Tom Parker, but, man, Vince is the best. He's the best promoter that's ever been. There's no doubt about it.
Sir, it's been absolutely a pleasure to talk with you. I think you actually taken the record. I've interviewed many people, many established wrestlers in my 3 years of Pancakes Power Slam. I think you've taken the record, or maybe I have to see, maybe close to the record of the longest one, which, you know, so that means there's some good substance. And we got a lot of people in the WeAreWrestling.net live chat saying they're just glued in and listening to the interview. So I want to thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I appreciate all the wrestling fans. They're the ones that make it possible for any of us that have ever earned one penny in that business. They're the ones that bought the tickets. They bought our T-shirts. They bought our action figures. They bought anything with our likeness on it, but without them, there would have never, ever, ever, ever been a need for us. So I say thanks to each and every one of you.
Absolutely. My pleasure talking to you tonight, sir, and all the best in your future work, sir.
Same to you. Thank you for having me.
All right, have a good night. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free. Our mind, let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we've taken this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we're here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings, you see in us. But our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo, cause the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Prizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash One Nation, with the strength of 100 men, with one intent, to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals, using God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak. That's too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we repping that wolf pack. The foundation shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
3 year anniversary show. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, there's only about 15 minutes left, but that was a fantastic interview. Surpassed any type of expectation I can have. And of course, how could I have a 3 year anniversary show without my boy Derek? Ladies and gentlemen, wow, thank you so much. Thank you, the Patriot Dale Wilkes, for the fantastic interview. Derek, the floor is yours, man.
Hey, the floor is mine. It's Pancakes and Power Slams. Let's say something. Dale Wilkes was phenomenal, phenomenal. Chris Featherstone, thank you so much for bringing him to the Pancakes and Power Slams. he's got so much history. He's got so much knowledge, even with the old territory system. I mean, he caught the tail end of that, but however, he still has stories about that. He's got stories about the WWE and the Stone Cold and Bret Hart. He was here tonight, Pancakes and Power Slam. I mean, the new Tuesday night site here, live, in charge. I mean, wearewrestling.net, the chat room's on fire. I mean, everything is just, it's the base. This is 3-year anniversary. This is an absolute celebration. Everyone's going nuts here in the studio.
Yes, 3-year anniversary. Thank you so much, everyone, for continuing to support. I'm so excited. It's been so amazing. I'm so just humbled and just excited about just the future of the show. 3-year anniversary, so excited about it. So we're just going to run through Raw just real quick, and we're just going to flood in the We Are Wrestling .net chat room. Trivia, trivia, trivia. Everybody knows trivia is my trademark, so to speak. We had the interview, but hey, I'll give you a trivia question. The trivia question is: what was the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania 8? What was the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania 8? Hope you have insurance. Fire. Thank you. I appreciate that. That was absolutely a very clever and witty comment there. Again, trivia question on deck was, what was the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania 8? All right, let's just go through Raw and let us know our takeaways. It was in Austin, Texas, and I've talked about this before. It's very, very baby-faced, heel, true to life baby face and heel crowd. We saw a lot of boos and Seth Rollins, and we saw a very surprising amount of cheers for my boy Roman Reigns, which I was very excited about. Of course, we have Seth Rollins gloating about the Authority's success at WrestleMania. And, of course, real quick, we're going to talk about Raw real quick, and then our flavor of the week is the five most patriotic gimmicks of wrestling history. And, of course, let us know your thoughts over the RearWrestling.net chat room, which is ablazing, and also the Bleacher Report and also the Blog Talk Radio chat room as well. So, you know, of course we get the Authority. Like I said, every week, it just seems like every week it starts with the Authority, Cena, Triple H, or you know, part of the mix. Then we get some, and then we get Rollins talking about, you know, Big Show putting over Rollins, and Rollins put over Show, and them kind of mocking Kane because he didn't really do anything at WrestleMania. And then this leads to interesting comments over at RearWrestling.net. My boy Roman, see ya. Very interesting. And then, of course, Savage versus Flair was the main event at WrestleMania 8. Great job. Who beat the Hart Foundation to win the WWE Tag Team titles at WrestleMania 7 is the next trivia question. And then, of course, we get the Raw was just revolved around the triple threat match, and also each person in the triple threat match, which is Orton, Ryback, and also Roman Reigns having singles matches themselves. We saw Randy Orton defeating Kane by disqualification. We also saw Seth Rollins defeating Neville, which was a very, very good match. I've said before, I'm not as big as NXT should be a separate entity of itself, but Neville's definitely shown on a big stage that he can hang with the boys. And this match with Seth Rollins was absolutely amazing. Then we got the Open Invitational U.S. title match, John Cena versus Stardust. He's definitely. I love what, you know, people know I'm not a Cena guy, and next week we'll talk about the podcast because we don't have enough time to talk about the podcast this week. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame next week, too, because of the interview, which was absolutely amazing again. But John Cena, Stardust, I like what they're doing with that. as far as John Cena. Bella Twins against Paige and Naomi. You hype up the Bella Twins against Paige and AJ at WrestleMania, just in the lose at Raw against Paige and Naomi. Luke Harper and Ryback. Ryback wins. Way to put over Ryback. New Day versus Lucha Dragons. People know I'm new. I'm a New Day guy. I'm a Biggie guy more than anything. And then by default, I'm a New Day guy. But they're kind of playing into the heelish tendencies with the New Day. The whole New Day sucks chant. They're actually kind of mocking it, and it's working for the New Day. So looks like we might have a heel turn coming around there. Roman Reigns defeating Big Show. I love how they're using really bona fide heels to really work with Roman Reigns. We've talked about that before in the show. Decent match there, way to put over Roman Reigns. And, of course, Sheamus with his new bad streak, beating Mark Henry. Miz beating Damian Mizdow. I don't know why they just had that match on Raw and clean. I don't know why they're doing that. And then, of course, Randy Orton defeating Roman Reigns and Ryback. It seems like they're going to do something with Kane and Ryback, or J&J Security and Ryback, and then they also do something with Big Show and Roman Reigns at Extreme Rules. So let us know your takeaways from Raw, Derek.
Yeah, the takeaways. He kind of forgot to mention, man, the primetime players had that angle, or at least a promo against the Ascension last night.
Yeah, the Ascension, yeah.
Bicycle cone or whatever fell off his shoulder pads. I had to give that great comedy relief. For much as Raw, I'd give it like a C minus, C average. Mizdow, that was a horrible start to a feud. Grabbing the tights, it deserves better. I'm going to be upset if they really bomb this one like they did with Goldust and Stardust. Stardust did have a good match last night against Cena. I do like what they're doing with Cena, maybe pumping up the U.S. Championship. But we got Flavor of the Week coming up, and we're going to be talking about patriotic gimmicks. So without further ado,
it is now time for the Flavor of the Week. Great setup there. Flavor of the Week time. Top five patriotic gimmicks. And before we do that, great job with the trivia. Indeed, it was the Nasty Boys. Next question is, who won the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 24? Who won the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 24? Okay, real quick, top five patriotic gimmicks. We keep getting comments of where did Del Wilkes play football. He mentioned it earlier in the interview. He played football in college, South Carolina, and he played for the Atlanta Falcons before he got cut. If I'm not mistaken, I believe he said the Atlanta Falcons. All right, real quick, the top five patriotic gimmicks. We have number five being Kurt Angle. Of course, we didn't have enough time, but taking the metal music from the Patriots was also an interesting discussion topic, very very much so. And CM Punk is the correct answer. Good job. And so, Kurt Angle with his medal and his patriotic. Yes, he was a heel, but he was very patriotic in his gimmick. The three eyes and wearing all the American gear and being the Olympic gold medal is very patriotic. And of course, he won the Olympic gold medal and represented the country well and transcended that to his wrestling career and made it very known. Number four, we have the Patriot, Del Wilkes. Of course, you know, spent the majority of his career of being the Patriot gimmick, which is absolutely awesome. Number three, we have Sergeant Slaughter. He was, just a very patriotic G.I. Joe, and I was really into that. It was very awesome. And, of course, his turncoat made it even more shocking when he turned his back on his country. Number two is Hacksaw Jim Duggan, or if we were in the Mid-South, it would be Hacksaw Jim Dugan. Dugan, just because of the USA, and just it speaks for itself. He was the American guy, as crazy and eccentric as he was. And number one, of course, without question, goes to the immortal Hulk Hogan, who has the real American theme song and has everything in between. He was the epitome of the American character. Derek, let us know your thoughts.
I give the list a lot. I would almost put maybe, I think, Thurston Slaughter would be number two, Kurt Angle would be three, Patriot four, and I'd almost put Hacksaw at five. And Kurt Angle, he won the Olympics for a gold freaking medal with a broken freaking neck. I mean, the guy's amazing. Red, white, and blue. Hulk Hogan, of course. Thurston Slaughter, he used to come in like a camouflage Cadillac, if I remember, with U.S. flags and And, yeah, the Patriot, obviously, I mean, the mask says itself. And the short amount of time the Patriot was in WWE, I mean, I won't forget it. I never have forgotten it. Team America against Team Canada, absolutely amazing. But, yeah, I agree with the list total. Honorable mention, we got the Lex Express and maybe Corporal Kirshner. Not so much. But, yeah, it's awesome list. I mean, Yeah, a wonderful end. Beautiful episode, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Thank you. I really appreciate you just riding along with me, man. 3 years strong, and this is just the beginning. Thank you so much for everyone who joined us over the RealWrestling.net chat room or interesting mention of Mr. America. and, of course, that was jokingly. But, yeah, that's another flavor of the week topic in itself, failed characters like Mr. America and Juan Cena, you know, masked characters, Mr. America and Juan Cena when he was fired for a little bit. That's another topic for another day. But, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so much for just continuing to support the show. I have so much fun every single week. I'm in PhD classes right now. That's how much you can tell that I still, you know, even with my crazy, crazy schedule and within writing and just, you know, everything that I do more than everything. I have a beautiful wife and two kids. I'm so thankful for you guys continuing to support you guys over at RealWrestling.net, you guys on the Blog Talk Radio live chat, you guys on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page who continue to be interactive every single day on that page. I love that page. And, of course, Crave Wrestling through Twitter. I thank you. Thank you so much. 3 years, ladies and gentlemen. This is just the beginning. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dale Wilkes. And until next week, I appreciate you guys so much, and thank you. Continue to support. God bless. Daddy loves you, Elijah. And good night.